This week on Straight Talk Africa, the African Growth and Opportunity Act, known as AGOA, provides duty-free access to the United States market. It has sustained and boosted the growth of a lot of businesses on the continent since 2000. It is set to expire in 2025, and many officials are nervous about an extension. Can AGOA be an opportunity for the United States to redefine its economic ties with the continent? Straight Talk Africa starts right now. Hello and welcome to Straight Talk Africa. I'm Vincent McCorry. The African Growth and Opportunity Act, also known as AGOA, is a landmark legislation of the United States that enables sub-Saharan African countries to access U.S. markets without paying taxes. Its objective is to promote economic growth, development, and reduce poverty. AGOA turns 25 next year, but it also expires. Will it be reauthorized?
Africa is the most important continent of this century, and we in the United States need to act like it. It is the fastest growing with the youngest population. There's more than 350 companies across the continent with a market capitalization above $1 billion. 30 years from now, the middle class of Africa will exceed 1 billion people.
Well, U.S. Senator Chris Coons, a Democrat, together with Senator James Rich, a Republican, introduced a bill to renew the United States trade pact with Sub-Saharan Africa ahead of its expiration. Does reauthorization provide an opportunity for the United States and Africa to redefine their relationship and financial interests? To help us unpack what is next for AGOA, I'm joined by Florizel Liza, President and CEO of the Corporate Council on Africa. Previously, Ms. Liza has served as Assistant U.S. Trade Representative for Africa in 2003. In that capacity, she led trade and investment policy towards 49 sub-Saharan African nations and oversaw implementation of the African Growth and Opportunity Act. Welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Oh, thanks so much for having me here again at Voice of America to talk about one of my favorite subjects, which is AGOA.
Yes, so we're happy to have you with us. And let's just start at the very beginning. The one thing I wanted to get some clarification on, often when we talk about AGOA, we also talk about eligibility, countries that qualify. What does that mean?
When AGOA was put in place in 2000, first of all, there were many people. I don't want to start naming all the names of key people on the Hill and others who worked for years to try to establish a new way of having the United States engage with its African, sub-Saharan African nations in particular. Much of the focus before 2000 had been focused on aid or development assistance. And I think that those of us who understand how important trade and investment is for economic growth for every country of the world, including the United States, AGOA was put in place to shift the focus a bit from aid to trade. And now people are also talking about the investment that's needed. And the eligibility criteria were put in place because members of Congress and those in the administration at the time, but particularly members of Congress who were working on this, some of the key founders, Congressman Rangel and McDermott and others, wanted to make sure that the countries who would benefit from duty-free access to the U.S. market for over 6,000 products were countries that were putting in place the right kinds of policies that supported their own economic development, that supported good governance, supported rule of law, that were investing in their people. And so having those eligibility criteria linked to AGOA eligibility was the way of supporting not what the U.S. necessarily thought was best, but what Africans themselves thought were best for their own countries, their own citizens. And so with that, The annual reviews looking at AGOA eligibility criteria began when the bill was first launched in 2000 under the Clinton administration.
Mm-hmm. Now, as we just mentioned, you did serve as Assistant Secretary, Assistant U.S. Trade Representative for Africa, and you were very instrumental, in fact, in implementing AGOA. You came in just like a couple of years after it had been launched. Can you share with us some of the successes like in the early days, the early years, and some of the challenges that might have been faced both from the U.S. side and also by African countries that wanted to benefit from AGOA?
Well, first of all, let me just say that it was really a very important step that an assistant U.S. trade representative for Africa was in fact established when AGOA was put in place in 2000. And the first assistant U.S. trade representative for Africa, Rosa Whitaker, my predecessor and on whose shoulders I stand, she played a huge role in AGOA's development and its passage. And so, you know, we always want to at least mention Rosa as the mother of AGOA. I came in 2003, a few years later, and was really honored to be able to step in and coordinate the interagency process. It's something that the Office of the U.S. Trade Representative leads, but all the key U.S. agencies, State Department, Commerce Department, Treasury, USAID, Department of Labor, and so many others were really critical in that interagency process. And every year, we would come together to look at what all of the embassies from Africa, the U.S. embassies in Africa, were saying about the individual countries, that whether they were meeting the particular AGOA eligibility criteria that year. And over the years, there have been some countries that have become ineligible because of, in some cases, coups. In most cases, countries that have lost eligibility, it has been related to coups. And so that's something where, you know, if you have a sort of illegal taking over of government, you really can't understand or know who your partners are on the ground. Mm-hmm. So a number of countries over the years have lost eligibility. But let me just also say that many of them who did lose also regained their eligibility. So from my perspective, having the long-term view of AGOA, I believe that many of the sub-Saharan African countries that have been eligible have been able to take some advantage of AGOA. Others have maximized their utilization of AGOA, including some small countries. But I think that of in 2022, out of the 36 AGOA-eligible countries, there were 23 that exported products to the U.S. under AGOA. Yeah. So even though sometimes people say that just a handful of countries have benefited and in a handful of products, my experience is visiting many, many AGOA factories across the continent over the years is that even when it's a small amount of trade, it makes a big difference on the African side. And so I am a believer that AGOA has been beneficial. It's also benefited U.S. companies and American consumers by having access to well-made products and factories that are well-controlled and where U.S. standards for production are respected and honored. As I said, I've been in a lot of those factories, and I've seen that with my own eyes. So I believe that AGOA, as the cornerstone of the U.S. economic relationship with Africa since its establishment in 2000, has done a really great job of advancing Africa's production of value-added products. AGOA was not put in place to support their export of raw commodities or natural resources, but those value-added products that they could send to the market and be competitive in the U.S. market.
And we'll expound on that, but briefly, before we go to break, are you able to tell us, or at least have that conversation on, what is it that those countries that have benefited most did in order to take advantage of AGOA?
Well, I think the most important thing is that those countries that establish AGOA utilization strategies, where they work together with their private sectors, identified particular products and particular tariff lines where they could be competitive, they're the ones who have done the most. And there's some real success stories in countries that have increased their AGOA exports 100%, 200%, 500%. Over the course of 2 or 3 years, simply by putting in place and implementing effectively an AGOA utilization strategy. And so we are encouraging all the countries who have not yet put in place AGOA strategies to do so, and also encouraging those who have strategies that may be a bit dated to update those strategies so that they can continue to take advantage of AGOA and access to the U.S. market.
So is there something like an outreach? I mean, how do some countries know that, you know, we need to do one, two things in order to be eligible? Or is it up to them to just figure out?
Oh, I mean, we have worked, the United States has worked hand in hand with the AGOA eligible countries over the years in several ways. First of all, trade capacity building is very important, helping with the supply side constraints. And just as an example, we have put in place regional trade and investment hubs where they work with the producers on the ground to help them with a variety of things. For example, making sure that they have the right kind of packaging, making sure they understand the paperwork that needs to be submitted with their AGOA exports, and also taking them to trade shows in the U.S. where, you know, a dozen or so from every region would come to a U.S. trade show to make sure that U.S. buyers would see exactly what Africans have to offer. And I went to a number of those trade shows in the agribusiness sector, in the beauty and cosmetic sector, in the apparel and footwear sector. And it was always amazing to see the African pavilion. We would call it the African pavilion, where there would be a whole section of African producers from AGOA eligible countries who would be showing what they have to offer to the U.S. market. And I can tell you that in a number of cases, they got orders and are supplying to major U.S. buyers of African products. And today, you can go in many stores that we know and some that are smaller, Walmarts and Targets and the Children's Place, and we can find products that say made in Ghana, made in Lesotho, made in South Africa, and also our grocery stores. You can go in our grocery stores and pick up products that are made and produced in Africa and being shipped to the U.S. Cashews and so forth. So it's really a matter of knowing how the Africans have taken advantage. But I do want to say this much. Just because there has been some success does not mean that we have maximized what Africans can do under AGOA. So I don't want people to think that my enthusiasm ignores the fact that so much more can be done to help Africans be major suppliers in the U.S. market.
And actually, I want us to expand on that, but it's time for a short break. When we return, we'll continue our discussion on the future of AGOA and how it might be able to redefine the U.S.-Africa economic engagement. Stay with us.
In times of change, when the world seems uncertain and what we hear doesn't reflect what we see, we seek the truth, when we are told only part of the story, we lose trust. In moments of crisis, our dreams, hopes, and wishes for a better tomorrow depend on a free press. At Voice of America, we bring you the stories that people take risks to see. We connect the world and unite it with truth. At Voice of America, we show you the whole picture.
It has been said that art is the windows to man's soul. Without it, he would never be able to see beyond his immediate world, nor could the world see the man within. On the next Our Voices, we'll explore the benefits of art therapy with an emphasis on the mental health advantages, as well as how it can address culture, gender diversity, and social justice issues. Join the conversation each week right here on Our Voices.
You're watching VOA's Red Carpet. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Thank you so much for joining us each week right here on Red Carpet. We bring you the latest in.
We are discussing the African Growth and Opportunity Act, known as AGOA, that provides duty-free access to the United States market. It's set to expire next year, and there are calls from the U.S. and the continent for its reauthorization. With us is Florizel Liza, President and CEO of the Corporate Council on Africa. So, Florizel, let's go a bit further with the whole question of how African countries can really truly benefit from AGOA. You know, there have been calls also for African countries to diversify a little bit on their the commodities, because they rely primarily on primary commodity export. And some say that these ones can be challenged by market forces. Sometimes suddenly things just fall through, and the countries suffer a great deal. So why is it important to diversify in the economies, and how can they add value so that increasingly whatever they are selling to the United States is yielding more to the countries?
Well, first of all, as I was saying, AGOA was put in place really to help Africans diversify and to add add value to their natural products, their raw commodities. And so the way that AGOA was actually shaped was that they would get duty-free access to the U.S. market for those value-added products. And so just as an example, lots of countries can ship pineapples to the U.S. duty-free. What AGOA did was allow pineapple juice and processed pineapple products to be able to come into the U.S. duty-free and give the Africans that competitive advantage in the value-added product. And so that's what it's been doing over the years, though obviously there is a lot more that can be done. But I think the main thing that people are talking about today is that Africa today is different than the Africa of 2000 when AGOA was first passed. One of the major things that has happened in Africa is the African Continental Free Trade Area, which is now removing tariff and non-tariff barriers among Africans. But what that's doing is allowing Africans to be more competitive in global value chains. And so if the inputs can move more easily, the intermediary products can move more easily across the African borders, then that final product that gets made in a particular country can then get shipped out with lower cost and fewer barriers and make them more competitive in the U.S. market under AGOA and globally. And I have seen that for myself. can give you examples of this, where products are being sent from several countries to another country in Africa, used in the final product that then gets shipped to the U.S. under AGOA. And the AFCFTA is really a game changer, not only for intra-African trade, but for Africa's role in global markets, where many of the buyers now are looking to diversify their value chains and supply chains. We saw what happened during COVID, and a lot of companies are looking at Africa as a place to source from and to diversify our supplies so that we're not dependent, for example, too much on China or other countries in the Asia region. Africa is well situated now as one of the largest free trade markets in the world to really step in and play a role. The other thing is that there are key sectors that the African Union and the AFCFTA are focused on. There's automotive, agribusiness, pharmaceuticals, and transportation and logistics. And these are all areas where U.S. Companies really have they are our major players in those particular sectors. And so therefore, the opportunities for the U.S. and U.S. companies to engage with Africa in those key sectors they've identified as a part of their economic growth, we really are the best partners for them, to be honest. And everywhere I go in Africa, they want to work with U.S. companies. They want to buy U.S. products, especially the youth in Africa. So things have changed since 2000. And this is a great time for the U.S. to be looking at how to scale up our relationship, our economic relationship with Africa.
And I think we'll talk a bit more about that, given that China is going big. And of course, other countries like Turkey and other, others are trying to get a big share of the African market and the commodities. I mean, I know there's so much of demand from China for African products too, especially agricultural produce. Now, in terms of though the AGOA, you talked about, you know, all the benefits and how many countries could even benefit more. But then there has been this talk of reauthorization. Will AGOA be reauthorized? Why has there been concern? Is there a risk? Was there a risk at any point that this could be a challenge?
Well, I think that there is a lot of support, as has been the case over the years, bipartisan support and bicameral support, both the U.S. House of Representatives and Senate. We hear a lot of remarks, including at the recent AGOA forum, by members of the House Ways and Means Committee, Senate Finance, Foreign Affairs, and Senate Foreign Relations Committees of their support for AGOA and their intent to reauthorize it. The concern has been that we really should not wait until 2025 to do it. Many of us, we have the AGOA Reauthorization and Enhancement Alliance. We've been trying to get since 2023 for the members of Congress to move ahead and reauthorize AGOA. Why? Because companies that buy from Africa or globally, their plans are made a year and a half, 2 years ahead. And if we wait until 2025, we are really looking at the fall off, the decline of African exports to the U.S. under AGOA. It happens every time AGOA is getting ready to be to end. One version of AGOA will end, and we're looking for reauthorization. And we already are seeing a decline in African exports under AGOA to the U.S. over the last year or so. So this is why for us, it's urgent. We really want Congress to move as quickly as possible to extend AGOA for as long as possible, a minimum of 10 years. Some people are looking at 16 years. I think that would be great. Many of us think that would be great. Yeah. We hope that it can be done soon. We hope that a new Congress will move quickly to reauthorize hopefully in 2024 after the U.S. elections. But let's not wait until September of 2025 to reauthorize. It's very late then, and factories in Africa will have closed, and workers, especially women, all those women I see in those factories, and they're young. So it's youth and women will be out of jobs. And we just think it's important to move now if we can.
Now, we did actually begin the show with a soundbite from Senator Chris Coons. And we know that Senator Chris Coons and Senator James Rich in April did introduce the African Growth and Opportunity Act, Renewal and Improvement Act of 2024. From what you've read in that that act, what is the major difference between that? And actually, they're saying it should be reauthorized for 16 years, which will be something that makes you happy. From what you understand, what is the fundamental difference between that and the one that is expiring? Because they said it should be improved over the previous one.
Right. And there have been a lot of discussions about how to improve AGOA. And, you know, there are some things in the Coons-Rich bill which are also enhancements to AGOA that a number of us think would be useful and would help improve utilization. So, for example, a long reauthorization, 16 years is what's proposed in that bill. We think that would signal a long-term engagement with Africa and would let buyers know as well as producers in Africa know that AGOA is here for the long term. Second, it would, instead of having annual reviews, every year review, it would review every 3 years. And this is important because then what that means is if a country's doing all the right things, buyers don't have to sort of pause every year to see, okay, will they be renewed? It'll be renewed for 3 years at a time, you know, in a review that happens every 3 years. And what that means is that even if there's a country that has, for example, a coup, of course, there's always the opportunity to take action and make them ineligible. But for those who are doing the right thing, we should be signaling that they are good partners for the U.S. and U.S. buyers should be working with them in a long-term kind of framework. So that's another thing it does. A third thing that it proposes is a change in the way that countries are graduated from AGOA eligibility. Right now, whenever a country reaches for the first time the World Bank IMF levels for per capita income, then they would, according to the law, have to be made ineligible for AGOA and graduated. Mm-hmm. What the Coons-Rich bill does, and something that many of us support, is let's look at that country over a 3 to 5 year period, and let's see what happens, because countries like Mauritius, just as an example, have hit the middle income target in terms of income, but then has dropped down. Then maybe it comes back up and drops down again. It's cyclical. So let's look at a country in a 3 to 5 year period.
Well,
instead of just graduating them right away. And
there are a couple of other things
that are enhancements as well that are important. Can I mention more enhancement that's
definitely a lot to talk about, but then we have to leave it here because of time. Thank you for the thought-provoking discussion, Florizel. Liza, we appreciate your time. Thanks to our affiliate stations for broadcasting Straight Talk Africa across the continent. I'll see you next time.